Procurement, the podcast where we delve into the intricate workings of public sector procurement and the innovations shaping its future. In today's episode, we're thrilled to host Graham Collins, Director of ProQuest Consulting and Orbiter Collaborative Analytics Limited, with a distinguished career spanning roles at global giants like Diageo, Unilever, JP Morgan, and the National Australian Bank. Graham brings a wealth of experience to the table. His transition from the corporate world to founding his own consultancy and tech venture underscores his commitment to revolutionising procurement practices. Hi, Graham. It is absolutely lovely to meet you.
Anna, hi. Good afternoon. That's quite an introduction.
I hope I've done you justice. Are you happy with that introduction?
I am. I'm slightly in awe of my own introduction.
Yeah, we've made you sound very prestigious, but you are a really credible professional. And I think we wanted to set the scene because you've worked in such huge organisations. You've now founded your own company, which is really exciting. You know, what motivated you to make this transition? How did we get here?
Well, as you say, the career was a very long one, and procurement wasn't necessarily my starting point, but became it in my Unilever days. And throughout all of those organisations, procurement has been really a kind of passion almost, and something which really motivated me. So as I kind of moved later into the career, so that's kind of post the National Australia Bank and through and into kind of Diageo, I was, mindful that many of those kind of organisations, the kind of structure and strategic direction was kind of not necessarily in my control. And I was kind of eager to kind of practice and undertake kind of procurement work in a way that kind of suited me and my ethos. So I felt, and also I got a sense that whilst the organisations were marvellous, really, and I couldn't have wished for a better kind of sequence of experience. But you kind of do recognise you're not always in control of things to the extent that you would like to be. So I wanted to carry on and do things in my own style. So that was the motivation for kind of setting up the company, which was kind of 20-odd years ago now, which was ProQuest. And the word pro and quest, i.e. the search for ever better procurement practice, was where that came from. And I thought all of that kind of instilled kind of corporate knowledge and experience and just the view of how different companies behave would serve me well in terms of my own kind of business. So that's kind of how it happened. And it was a bit of a leap of faith, of course, as always.
Absolutely. Isn't it just whenever anyone goes into opening their own business, you know, there's a leap of faith. It's that entrepreneurship, that drive in yourself that gets you going to do it. And I always laugh whenever I speak to anybody in procurement. Now it's changed because there are degrees in supply chain and sourcing. But before then, people found themselves in procurement. Procurement found them. They didn't choose that path. They just connected with it on a different level.
Yeah, and I and this was really something which, you know, sticks with me really now. My what was then the kind of head of procurement for the Unilever business that I was in approached me. I was working in a technical role. I was kind of quality assurance and packaging technology, that kind of stuff. And he approached me and said, "Have you ever thought of joining the buying team?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Why not?" I said, "Well, I see the consequences of bad buying, kind of in the way the factory operates or fails to operate sometimes because of kind of quality issues." And he said to me, "Well, if you want to make a difference, make the money work harder and use the money to influence things." And I thought, "Oh, that sounds like really compelling, a really compelling reason for joining the commercial team," as it was. And I came and I never regretted, you know, that. And that was kind of my objective, was really motivated about improving things, improving the way businesses operate using procurement particularly. And that was kind of the way I came under quite a lot of pressure not to move out of this kind of technical function that I was in. But I said, "No, I'm going to go." So I did. And that was it. You know, and it's a fascinating, the link, because it's kind of at the interface between organisations who need things and markets that supply things, that kind of interface is really never-endingly fascinating. And so anyway, so that was my kind of rationale for joining. So I wasn't essentially, and I was studying accountancy and the commercial team and so on. So I got a real mix of kind of technical and commercial skill, which kind of served me well as things progressed from there. So yes, the route into procurement isn't as maybe as structured perhaps as it was in those days.
And that's it. You went in, you never looked back, and you've had experience and exposure with businesses like we've listed before. So Diageo, Unilever, JP Morgan, National Australia Bank. How do you think this has influenced your approach to procurement?
Well, several things, I suppose. Firstly, enormously proud of all of those organisations, so no negatives. But one of the things which really struck me was firstly, they're commercial through and through. So and it's almost part of their DNA, and it's something to reflect on when we think about public sector organisations whose ethos is very, it comes from a very different place, I suppose. And, you know, so when I, you know, when you're a buyer, you have responsibility, you know, you're monitored on the cost of supply, the goods and services, you know, you have reports monthly saying what the variances are, and it's your job to fix it. If a supplier isn't performing, it's your job to fix it. There is very clear kind of accountability. So that was kind of one thing. It was that kind of commercial ethos. The other thing that was a shock for me when I moved from a kind of Unilever business, which was manufacturing of consumer goods, I moved to what was the European division of the National Australia Bank. And they'd set up a corporate procurement team, that number of kind of retail banks and insurance companies. And this new initiative, which had been born out of some work done by one of the big six consultancies, I was then the head of. And they'd estimated some savings that would be generated for the bank by this new procurement team that was about 30 strong, but not yet recruited, apart from me. And the cost was divvied up on the expected proportion of savings from each of the business units. Mm-hmm. And the business units basically said, why do we need this corporate group as a burden and as an additional cost? What are you bringing that we're not doing already ourselves? Because their procurement was very devolved and they were doing it, you know, quite nicely, thank you very much. And so I suddenly realized that my team, and the budget of kind of 3 million quid a year, the services didn't want to pay for me unless I could demonstrate I could offer something that they weren't able to do themselves. So this whole thing was crikey, you know, where it was kind of embedded in a supply chain, you knew what your role was, and it was very clear. You go to kind of a services-based European and then global operation where your reason for being has got to be demonstrated. It's got to be proven. Your value add has got to be measured. And also the other important point was the service divisions, well, were either neutral or slightly antagonistic or very antagonistic, you know, so they weren't receptive to this new procurement spokesperson coming and trying to sell them kind of procurement services that we're going to have to pay for anyway. And it was kind of, where's the money? Where are you going to deliver the money from? So anyway, so that kind of, I guess that element of you need to do and offer a service in whatever procurement capacity that is better and more than either some of your costs, but in a way that is relevant and supported by the businesses, because they're ultimately funding you. And if you can't demonstrate that, stop doing it, you know, get out of the way. And, you know, I think that is a message even now that says, you know, if all you're doing is kind of churning through tenders, valuable as that is and necessary, it doesn't necessarily demonstrate visibly to directors of adults or children's services or whatever, it doesn't necessarily demonstrate the value that you are bringing to that and the ways in which you're contributing to the success of any authority. So, you know, so that's been really a really salutary lesson. And actually, if the services in the bank said, we're not really getting value from you, they would just stop funding. Yes. And then I'd be redundant and everybody else would be redundant. So, you know, to that extent, I was, you know, you really, really had to think hard about what is the proposition here.
Yes.
Now, thankfully, that happened, and the model that was adopted was then globalized. So it clearly had demonstrated some value. So it kind of won through, but it was a close call, to be fair.
And you know, this is so I am a self-confessed procurement nerd. I'm not SIPs qualified. I always preface with that. But I public sector procurement is my passion. I find it fascinating. The new Procurement Act that went live in February, I believe, gives this huge opportunity to the public sector to be more commercial. And one of the things I love about your story there is the idea that actually organisations in the private sector spend to save. They acknowledge that a commercial function is valuable, that it gives savings back to the organisation, that it can prove those savings. And it gives people an opportunity to be truly commercial and to prove their worth by thinking strategically and going the extra mile with their procurements for all the added value and benefits they can get. And you actually do that in the public sector as part of your offering. You work with local authorities, don't you? And you look at optimising procurement functions in the public sector.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's kind of how the journey kind of leads. And I did my first, I guess, assignment in the public sector was with communities, local government, as was doing some work around. They'd had an OGCS was at the time, a kind of assessment on the way that they were procuring stuff wasn't quite in the right place, so they needed a bit of help. So I did that. But really on the back of kind of that, my first introduction, it's been predominantly local authorities all the way. And I think, as you say, in terms of kind of transformation or trying to get this mind and kind of more commercial ethos and service offer, kind of moving away perhaps from a focus primarily on tendering activity and doing a kind of offering them a broader kind of service offer. I think I tried to count the other day, 15 or 16 or more local authorities along the way. And in a way, I suppose slightly disappointingly, that the challenges clearly now, which are predominantly financial in a way, a lot of financial challenges, but there are so many things which need to be addressed and can be addressed through kind of more effective procurement work. I think we touch on it, I think, maybe later, but the kind of functional, what used to be the kind of functional elements of procurement needs to be more broad, it needs to be broader, and needs to have a different skill set, and needs to be, as I had found in the bank, needs to be much more kind of business oriented, relevant, and definitely adding value to what they're trying to achieve. And if organizations fall into kind of a technical processing kind of mindset, and so we'll come back to it, then that value demonstration becomes an administrative activity, which, you know, tendering, legitimizing the kind of contractual arrangements and competition and so on is valuable. But actually, if you're looking at driving value entirely in a much more dynamic way, particularly, you know, the Act reflects that, you've got to be thinking upstream, working with the commissioners and developing how to best organize and interact with the market, you know, shape what you're trying to do before you get to the kind of tendering, and then manage what you've put in place, both in terms of contracts and relationship, in a much more kind of joined up way. And that things are generally have historically certainly been very kind of partitioned, which gets in the way of delivering value. So, as you say, local authorities, I'm tremendously just in awe of what they're managing to achieve, and the almost SA evolution, but it's kind of high speed evolution, really, almost revolution, to try and keep things going. But I think there's such an opportunity with, again, this procurement. And I do struggle with the word procurement, actually. If there is a lesson, maybe if people are thinking this kind of core tendering elements, that which is the kind of regulated kind of part of the process, if they think that's it, and that's, you know, if we could do that better, I think diminishing returns, got to do it well, you've got to be compliant, all the rest of it. But actually, that's only probably a third or a quarter of, no, half of the story, if I'm being generous. You know, that there is everything to play for if you think more commercially about the process kind of end to end. And that's where the kind of commercial skills need to kind of develop. And it isn't just within the what you might call in brackets the procurement team. It needs to be that engine commercially equipping the organisation to be more commercial. And I know one of the things which Orbiter had done recently, just by way of example, was to create for a local authority that had a group of care homes that it owned but were operated by a commercial organisation, was to create for the commissioners a cost model of the running of the costs of that operation, and by allowing the commissioners then to play around with the mix of nursing, residential, dementia care, and so on within each of the homes. The homes were of different sizes. They could see what the impact was on the operating costs and the profit that
amazing
would be, you know. So it, in a way, it gave some insights to the commissioners, not to procurement necessarily or to finance, but to the commissioners, so that they could understand the implications of what they were proposing. And if, you know, inflation was to go up by 5% or wages by 3%, well, what did that do? What if they put all of that type of care in this type of home? What did that do? And so on. So, you know, it's an example, really. I'm not, you know, there are other models available, I suppose, but it's a demonstration of, you know, that commercial insight needs to be all over the place, not just coming out of tendering. And that's where the whole data, you know, what's going on? How do we get insight from information and data in order to help the services and help, you know, management teams kind of make better choices and decisions about what's happening? Understanding cause and effect, outcomes and cost doesn't, you know, it's not joined up really at the moment. So a huge opportunity. Sorry.
You're preaching to the choir, and everything you've touched on there is absolutely right. You know, this skill set, I refer to it in lots of talks that I do as skill set deprivation within procurement for business partnering, commercial management, true supplier relationship management, as it is in a private sector commercial functions, very different to how it is in the public sector. And as you've correctly said, a lot of what is going on within commercial functions now is because of workload, because of staffing pressures, because of all the lists that's as long as your arm of the challenges that they've got, you know, it's transactional because they are so pressured. But there's lots of other things that are going on there, isn't there? So when you've worked with local authorities, you know, if they're listening now, what would be pitfalls that you might advise them against?
Well, it's difficult to be overly generic because they're all in, maybe in different stages in a way. And, you know, if you think of the end-to-end process, some organisations are really cracking on with really excellent commissioning, or there'll be certain parts of the organisation that are really good at commissioning and others less good. Procurement in the middle, you know, is kind of a fairly standardised, I would say, even commoditised activity. Contract management may or may not exist in a form that we might recognise. Relationship management, not really in any kind of structured way. I've not seen that develop terribly well. So just in terms of kind of general themes, I think, firstly, executives think about the end-to-end process. It's a continuum and people have got a role to play, and it doesn't work. The functional kind of chunks that we divide up our activities, we need to remove those kind of barriers in a way and just think about how we get the whole process to work better. So don't let functions get in the way, and, you know, that kind of commercial wraparound throughout. The other thing I think touches on your point about the pressure, the financial constraints, and I think I've seen evidence where organisations are salami slicing and particularly look upon that kind of corporate core as something which needs to be squeezed in order to enable funding for service front, you know, service delivery, the front kind of front line. And in a way, I understand the logic of that. But what it is doing is ultimately it reduces the core, actually brain power at the core, to kind of degrades it to such an extent that it's not actually thinking or providing any strategic or time to think. Mm. And therefore, almost everything from the kind of commissioning activity, the processing of kind of tendering, market responses, it's all then very reactive. It kind of tends to follow what has a variation on what's been done before. give or take. Contract management is kind of another, it's another burden, so it tends to be, you know, again, minimized in a way to the extent they can do in order for just, you know, focus on operational stuff. So it's kind of a kind of degradation, but there comes a point where that makes the wheels ultimately then fall off, because once you kind of got to that point, there's nothing much else that they don't almost have the capacity to get out of this kind of doom loop that they're in, with kind of reactive means, inefficient use of resources and tactical responses all the way along. We've got to do it. We've got to use a framework because that's the quickest way to market, or we want that supply because they've done it, all this kind of stuff. You're not thinking about how do you kind of orchestrate this to give you the best outcomes for the least possible money. You're not necessarily having time to do the analysis or sort your systems out to give you data that is meaningful and helpful. And therefore, you end up stuck in this kind of hamster wheel. It's incredibly difficult. So then, you know, my work more recently is about kind of how do we transform ourselves to get out of this. But you can't just do procurement on its own.
No.
I remember another kind of thing that sticks in my mind, a chief executive who just retired said, well, now we've sorted procurement out, we just need to make sure we buy the right thing.
It's that simple.
And it's true, isn't it? You know, you know, we can procure stuff really well, but if you're buying the wrong thing, it's a complete waste of money.
Yeah.
So you can commission well and procure well, but if you don't manage how that contract and arrangement is then delivering stuff, the value degrades over time anyway. Yes. You know, inflation creeps up more than it should. Contract clauses are not, upheld. There's creep in terms of kind of value for money. So you've got to have all moving parts kind of working well in order to get the right outcomes. So that will be a plea if any chief execs are listening. A, thank you to the one that said those things to me. I hope he recognises those words. It will be if they can take that message away. And so I think there comes a point at which, if you are obviously clearly, you can't afford to spend too much more money. But I guess in terms of downsizing, you've really got to invest where you've got an opportunity to get a big return on your investment. Don't just do it kind of pro rata. And I would, and you might say, well, you would say this, wouldn't you? But given that, you know, most local authorities, more than 60% of the money coming in goes out to kind of third parties, you'd think, well, if we can get that right, or at least get it better, it would A, pay for itself, but B, you know, it would make the whole organisation, if you think about that end to end, would make the whole organisation much better at what it does, more orchestrated, and would be more credible in the market as well. You know, so I think the prize is a big one. And I think some chief execs, and indeed members, to be fair, I was with one organisation recently, having done some Orbiter kind of analysis, who became very, very, he was a cabinet member for resources. He became very animated and excited about the focus, or increasing the focus, on third party spend and what could be done better.
Yes.
And they're beginning to, you know, with that kind of mandate and with that champion, with, you know, with those key champions, then the whole thing begins to change. Mm. And also, I guess, in terms of your own role, in terms of recruiting people, I know that there are a lot of professionals, good, incredibly good professionals, who are so frustrated because they feel they could do so much more, but they seem to be kind of wrapped into this kind of box of limited expectation, and they can't get out of it, and they feel very frustrated, and ultimately they leave and find somewhere that is more, has maybe higher expectations and regard for what they can do. So and so I think in there somewhere is a win-win for the for the organisations and the kind of outcomes, savings and other outcomes, social value and all the rest of it. So, yes, so it's still worth fighting for, I think.
Good. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think there's so many things there, and the temperature of the organisation in how they view commerciality within their business, whether it's public sector, local authority, NHS, whatever it is, it has to be from the top down. It has to start at board, chief exec, MD, and filter down. But one of the things that I love about the service that you provide with your organisations is the opportunity to have someone that is unbiased, unrelated, not stuck in the thick of it with those frustrations, with those all rose-tinted glasses, as we know sometimes yes. happens at board level, who can actually look at the process and see where it's going wrong, can access, create the data to be able to see that, and then put it into action. So my final question, if I may, for this podcast episode anyway, is could you share with us a success story where you delivered a really effective strategy that led to some exceptional results? And appreciate you might not be able to name the organisation, but a good old example.
I mean, there's other things. I wanted to, just to kind of refer, I won't kind of name names, but obviously the Orbiter platform is data. It's yes. really centred around data, and that's publicly available data. And one of the other, if I have a message for chief executives, please value your data.
Yes,
and
yes.
Think about data and what you can do with it. So the Orbiter platform was really born out of frustration in not being able to find out things like how much you're spending with supplier A or B or C, or what about your neighbours? What are they doing?
Yes.
But the using that as an analytical tool, there are now over 100 million invoices, you know, available across 100 organisations going back almost 10 years. And there's a lot of legwork in trying to make those categorised and consistent so that they're more usable. And that's available, so I would say people feel free. It is free. At least the access to the data is free. So there you go. I'm not selling. but actually analysing the trends in the data, both the level of activity and the amount of money being spent by category, by directorate, by supplier, by organisation even, you know, can be used to unearth things which are not terribly easily, not visible, and not normally so obvious. And also you can compare. So, for example, home to school transport, you know, a huge increase in spend in that area. But when you look at against the level of transactional activity, the number of children that are being transported or accessing home to school transport and so on, but compare one organisation versus another, the growth in trend versus the demand patterns, you say, why is it that organisation A is very different from organisation B or C? What are you doing in your procurement activities, or indeed in the market? What is different to what is going on elsewhere? So you get that kind of comparative analysis, because often people, you'll have heard it, I'm sure, when you say, why are the costs on X going up? And they say, oh, but the market is, you know, is what it is, you know, prices, yeah, inflation, wages. And then it's almost like the door is closed. But here we say, well, hang on a minute, you know, under this situation, or you're saying you've moved. We had one recently where, you know, we've shifted people from residential care and having more kind of care at home care.
Yes.
So we should see a dip in the demand for residential care then, shouldn't we? Well, that's not evident in the numbers. What is happening? You know, so it's kind of, it's using the data. So, you know, with that example, and now four or five organisations, just kind of looking across all of the spend can be, you know, millions of line items per organisation, is then to say, actually, we think there's something strange happening here and here and here, which can lead to savings opportunities and ranges of kind of savings and issues. And that can be, it's kind of a system top-down, it's a bit of both, actually. It's kind of using the granular data to look upwards. But then when you look at the holistic view, you're kind of saying, actually, what is going on here? And then drilling down, looking at contributors and so on. So I think that's an example. Another obvious example is around collaboration. I know that, you know, it's a very super critical, both we think of collaboration in this kind of very strategic sense, but actually collaboration could be at all sorts of levels. And yes, at a very practical level, the Orbiter platform says, well, actually, I'm spending this money with the supplier, but next door, they're spending even more with the supplier. Why don't we talk to each other? You know,
yes,
or I'm about to do a tender for X. Who else has done a tender for X? Quick search. Ah, I'll go and email someone else. But, you know, I was with a unitary in the Midlands and looking at their kind of spend profile. And I said, do you realise that 60% of the suppliers you are spending money with are also being used by the county that you are in.
Yes.
And I said, really? Are they? I said, are you collaborating, or are you, you know, sharing information or talking about the ones that are important to you? Well, no. You think, missed opportunity. You know, there are so many of those. So without kind of, as you say, I'm a kind of neutral observer in a way, but using data to guide people to where the kind of interesting things are. And that's, you know, that's the value of data. So that's kind of, I guess, some limited examples, really, of where that approach kind of drives a different way of thinking, partly, but also, I guess, helps people recognise, of course, this is public data.
Yes, so, yeah, of course.
It's there. They could use it themselves. You know, it's hard to find. It's often tucked away on a website. Sometimes it varies in its quality and level of consistency and all the rest of it. So, you know, providing it as a, you know, as a service, and then helping people if they need it to do kind of that deep dive analytical stuff, I think, you know, it can drive huge benefits. So there are examples for you.
They're fantastic examples. And I am really passionate about cross collaboration across the public sector, because I think the greater the spend power, the better you are going to do for your local communities. And that's what this commercial element is about in the public sector. It's about delivering better services, better healthcare, better housing, better everything for those communities. So I love that company perspective. I love what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. And just kind of reflecting that, you know, in terms of productivity, if I've got a contract to write, it's going to take me a lot of time. And this comes onto the technology piece, but it's also collaboration. But if I can find someone else who has done it and already has, you know, documentation, the experience of running the tender, how well the tender went, for God's sake, go and talk to them.
Yes.
And just find out how it went and then leverage that knowledge and share it, because that's hugely powerful, enormously time-saving, and it's real world, isn't it? People have done it before, so don't reinvent from the ground up every time. I was talking about somebody very frustrated with their legal teams recently, because all contracts are bespoke. They go through legal teams. Legal services is another one of those that hasn't really got enough capacity to kind of cope with all the work that's flowing through. And you think, I ran a bank. We had a suite of standard contracts.
Yes.
And it was, you know, pick them off the shelf. You made it a little bit of fine tuning, and we agreed rules about what we could fine tune, where we need a bit of legal input. But the vast majority of it was streamlined. And if you think about AI and so on, if we don't break out of this kind of processy loop, then AI is going to kind of just take all of those jobs away. We've got to be doing more value-added stuff. Otherwise, there is no, you talk about the evolution of what we do. It's got to be inside data. It's got to be end-to-end. It's got to be understanding markets, getting out there, and really bringing some value. And social value clearly is part of that, but just bringing some value to your organisations. And if you're in this processing loop, forget it. AI is going to be able to do most of that without, you know. So you need the skills you need and all the rest of that really has to step up a gear.
Graham, I feel like you've taken all these ideas out of my head, because we're so such similar perspectives. I'm so glad that Matt introduced us, and I'm so sad that we've run out of time, because I really could speak to you about this for much, much longer, because there's so many topics we haven't dug into yet. So may I invite you back to the podcast another time, please, because there's still lots for us to dig into. If people want to contact you because they want to hear more about your businesses, more about the offering you have for the public sector, how are they best to contact you? How should they get in touch, please?
Well, I don't know whether when you publish, you can include my email address. That's one way. If the Orbiter website's got a little button that says contact me, so they could do it through that, through the Orbiter website, which is orbitercollaborativeanalytics.com. So, yeah, do it that way and I'll pick it up.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
More than happy to share. And I guess, you know, one of the benefits of being independent is that you can share freely. You don't have to. It doesn't all have to be about earning money.
No, you're not tied.
I need to earn money, clearly, some of it anyway, to keep everything ticking over. But I can pick and choose what I do. So I'll be as generous as I can be with information help. And I'd also say for those who are in the public sector with a .gov.uk email address or a .nhs, but public sector people can register for free on the Orbiter platform and gain access to the data. So welcome feedback as well. So there we go.
Yeah, so free insight, free data, right. Free technology. I'm absolutely all about this. What's not to love?
What more can I do?
Thank you so much. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon, Graham.
Thank you, Hannah. Bye-bye.